Hello everyone, it is some ridiculous hour, gone 1 a.m. here in the UK, and I'm awake. Obi's fallen asleep downstairs and I've tried to wake him up, but to no avail so far. And I've just been listening to A Boo by Dreamcatcher SJE Sam and her partner Kate Spinner Girl talking about the pros and cons of guide dogs versus canes. Long canes, that is. And I thought I'd just join in and give my 2 cents, or my pennyworth, or penneth. My preferred form of mobility is a dog, and it always will be, because I'm okay with a cane, and I can get around if I have to. And I've got a reasonable level of confidence, but I don't enjoy it, and I find it quite stressful. And there's no way that I can walk as fast with a cane as I can with a dog. I've always naturally been a fast walker and been given fast dogs. In fact, guide dogs, my last dog, Nikki, she was a very small lab, very powerful, and we were very, very fast. GDMIs used to come out in aftercare, and if they'd never seen us before, they used to say, oh my God. And one of them nearly had a fit because, and we were legendary in our area, because they'd talk about me, how there's a flight of steps going down, and they always thought I wasn't going to stop at the top of it, or the dog wasn't going to stop. Of course, she never failed to stop. And they used to joke, and they used to say they drew short straws about who came on aftercare for me, because they'd have to get their running shoes on. Niall's a little bit slower, and that suits me, because so am I now, because of my kidney failure. I can't keep up that kind of walking for very long. In fact, it's one of the reasons why I don't go out with him as much as I ought to. I've been trying to put it right, but it's not always easy, especially now because I've got all the pavement up everywhere. At my last aftercare visit in November, I did go through all this with the GDMI. She said it was fine, and it was good, because he was at an age now where he didn't need to go out every day, and, you know, he's 7, and he's pretty laid back. He's quite happy indoors. He likes playing in the garden with his toys, and, you know, and I go out with him as much as I can. But I did say to her, if anything happened to him now, God forbid, or he had to retire for any reason, I wouldn't get another dog at the moment, because I said to her, I would have to have a dog suitable for an old lady. And then I said, hopefully when I get my kidney transplant and I get a lot of my energy back, and build up my fitness again, that dog will be totally unsuitable for me, and I would find it very frustrating. And she agreed that, you know, things as they are now are okay, and hopefully he can go on for like 3 or 4 years. And his workload will be light, probably. But that doesn't mean to say I'm happy with things the way they are. I'm not. And I have got confidence issues about going out, and it's nothing to do with the dog at all. I've talked about this many times. I had an incident when I had to be taken to A&E, and I didn't even have the dog with me at the time, so it was nothing to do with him at all. I do feel a bit sorry for him sometimes, because, you know, he still always thinks he's coming out with me, even when he isn't. But anyway, there are pros and cons. There are things I don't like about having a dog. There are things that are good about having a cane, and I think one of those is being able to know your environment better, because, you know, there'll be incidents like, I think most people, blind people, use echolocation to a certain degree. I know when, you know, a building line changes or where it's set back and things like that. But with a cane, you actually find things like lampposts and crossing posts and, you know, walls and I don't know, just curbs up to grass and stuff like that now. And a dog will avoid all those things and just avoid obstacles. And you might find they go to the right and they go to the left, and then you don't realise they've taken you round something. In fact, when people walk with me sometimes, I think it's quite, it makes me feel quite sad because the dog so does so much that you don't, when you can't see, you're not even aware of. They take you around things, and sometimes it might be a gentle pull to the left to avoid something, and you, and it's not so definite that you can even praise them for it. And it's quite sad because they've actually taken you into account and stopped you walking into it. And they must, probably 90, 80, 80% of what they do we may not even be aware of. With a cane, you find everything. I actually find that a bit nerve-wracking. Sometimes I hit things a bit too hard and it jolts me and I don't like that. But if you want to know your environment, even if you have got a guide dog, I always think it's a good idea to walk around it with a cane and find out what there actually is, because there are times when the dog does things wrong or you might get lost, as Kate or Sam or both of them said. And you might not be quite sure where you are, but if you know your environment a bit, you could get some clues from that. If you don't know it, because if you're used to walking it with a dog all the time, then it's much harder to find out a physical clue. I mean, obviously, you've got things like traffic. You know, you can orientate yourself very often by the sound of traffic, where it's coming from, which direction, how fast, and all kinds of things like that. But and another thing you can do, whether you've got a dog or a cane, is you can tell the change in the pavement surface sometimes. Another advantage of a cane is you've got no responsibility to it. You can just stick it in a corner when you come home, and you know, that's it. I am an animal lover, so looking after a dog isn't a chore to me or anything like that. I'm not saying Kate or Sam said it was, because they didn't. I'm just saying some people, it's the reason why they wouldn't want a dog, or a dog might suit them for mobility purposes, but they might just not be able to put up with all that, all else, the other things that it entails, like dog hair everywhere, and you know, just having to entertain a dog, not being able to just forget it when you come home, which obviously you can't do. And I've known guide dog owners who did try and do this, or they loved their dog and then they got a girlfriend who was, I knew one bloke, he actually trained, he had a lovely German Shepherd. He trained with me up in Scotland with one of my dogs, and he came from the southeast somewhere, I'm not exactly sure where, and he had this lovely dog. And the next thing I heard, well, I knew, because it was somewhere near where it was actually, I lived in for a year or so in a place specifically for the blind when I was young. This is going back a long time. And he got this girlfriend that was absolutely terrified of dogs. So they were like double flats and they were bedsits, but you shared a kitchen and a very small kitchen and a bathroom in between the two flats. And there was like a very small lobby, like between the two. Like, say, if you came out of your flat and then the kitchen would, say, be to your right, the toilet to the left, and the other person's door opposite. Now, this bloke lived in one of these places. No, she lived in this place, and he would come to stay with her for weekends and a lot of the time. And the dog wasn't allowed in the room with them because she was scared of it, and there was no one in the other room next to them. So they used to tie her lead to the door handle of the room opposite and just leave her there all weekend. Now, things like that are not on. And he, in the end, people complained, and not just because of that. There were other reasons. That dog was taken from him, quite rightly so. You know, people, if you have a dog, you need to know that it comes with responsibility. And, you know, if you're not prepared to put in the time with that, then just don't bother getting one. The advantages I find of a dog are being able to walk at a speed that is comfortable for me, and not worry. I don't feel the same tension that I do, because if I walk too fast with a cane and I hit something hard, it can sort of jolt you backwards, which is can be quite a shock, and I have done that a few times. Or I've actually walked in, I went crooked on a Pelican crossing in town, and my cane would have hit the post at the bottom, but I'd gone crooked and I wasn't expecting it, you see. I was expecting it to be a clear run across, so I probably wasn't using it as well as I should have been, and I actually walked into this thing and it was quite a shock, because I'd gone really badly crooked. And with the dog, that wouldn't have happened. And with the dog, I, you know, you have to work. It's hard also work as a team in a way, but it can be very rewarding if you if you're walking in a very busy area such as a station or, you know, rush hour and stuff like that. You know, to feel the dog weaving in and out of all the people. There's nothing actually quite like that, I don't think. I can remember when I worked in Savile Row at the back of Regent Street, and I used to get off the bus in quite a way down Oxford Street every day. I used to walk along Oxford Street, turn into Regent Street to the right, walk up and turn right along Conduit Street and then into the Savile Row at the back. And then I can remember so many times walking along Oxford Street in the rush hour. And it's bad any time of the year because you get tourists in the summer and you get tourists at Christmas doing the Christmas shopping, and the place is heaving with people. And sometimes you can't even get up to the crossing. You don't even know where the crossing is because you're just in this crowd of people and you just move when they do. But I can remember people would come up to me, like I was waiting to cross a side road, and they'd say, "I've just been walking behind you and your dog, and they're, and you know, I can't believe she's absolutely fantastic the way she's taking you through all the people." And, you know, you do feel very proud when people say things like that. And she was an exceptionally good dog, I think. And I do think that without my dogs, I probably wouldn't have done some of the things I did, and I wouldn't have been able to manage it as easily. I don't think, for instance, I could have got around as easily with my kids with a cane, because I had to have the baby in a buggy with a harness and tow it behind me. And, of course, I could have done this with a cane, but I don't think I would have felt as confident, because the dog was very conscious not only of the width of me and the buggy. The buggy wasn't that much wider than me, but it stuck out a little bit to either side of me. So a little bit was behind the dog, actually quite near the dog, near to the dog, not near enough for the wheels to catch their legs. But it was, you know, it stuck out wider than I was, both sides. And if we were passing somebody, like if the dog came over to the right to pass somebody, they had to look behind them to make sure that we'd got the pram right past the person before they centralised themselves on the pavement again. It was a responsibility, and I think I would have found that more difficult with a cane, doing stuff like that. I had two dogs that did that, because one of my dogs retired when, let me get this right, when Ronan was a year old. So she was the dog that took me through Connor's babyhood, and right up till Ronan was a year old, I had her. She worked till she was 11, 11 and 11 and a half. Just over 11 anyway. And then Ronan was only a year old, so he wasn't old enough to walk without a buggy or anything then. So I needed my next dog. My first dog wasn't specifically trained with the buggy. I kind of trained her myself. I wanted guide dogs to come out and check that everything was fine, but I'd been doing it for 3 months by the time they actually got their backsides down to see me, and they said there was no more advice they could give me. Everything was perfect and the dog was doing really well. And the second one was specifically trained to guide a buggy, guide me with a buggy. And not only that, but by then I had an older child, but he was still only five and something. So he still had to hold my hand a lot of the time. So there was me with the buggy behind me, the dog in my left hand, the child holding my right hand, or sometimes I'd hold a handle. I had a specially fixed handle behind me so that it was easier to get it up and down curbs so that it balanced properly, it didn't tip too drastically. So I had to let go of Connor's hand while I was crossing roads so I could get the pram up and down the curb, but he would hold on to the side of the buggy. So the dog had a great big load, not only in length, but in width. And there were times where the pavement was too narrow and I'd have to just say, "Connor, you'll have to walk, can you just walk in front?" or whatever. But, you know, on the school run, there wasn't any really, you know, which was the main thing we did, with him as well. But, you know, I used to go on the train to Bromley with my buggy. I used to walk all the way into town, which was about 3.5 miles each way and back. I used to go to the station and people would help me get it down the steps because there's no lift there. There still isn't. And, you know, people would help me lift it onto the train. I'd lift one end and they'd lift the other and we'd get the dog on. The same with buses. I don't know how I coped with it now, to be quite honest, but I did because I had no choice, really. But all I'm saying is I think the dog was, you know, the dog was helpful in that because she just guided us better than I, than I could have done with my stick. I don't think I would have had the confidence. I would have done it. The other thing was working in London, going around on the underground all the time, travelling all over the country and stuff like that. I would have done it with my stick, but I don't think I would have found it as easy. The dog definitely has made life much easier for me. The downside, which Sam did mention, is other people's perceptions and interference. I've had some horrific things happening to me with regard to other people. You know, I've had dogs since I was 18, and believe me, that's a pretty long time ago. So, you know, it's long ago worn thin. How old's your dog? How long have you had it? Is it your first one? And all that. Now, I'm 99% of the time I'm polite to people because, you know, it's general public in the main of funded my dogs, and apparently they cost £50,000 from beginning to end. And as I'm on now, two of my dogs didn't work out, I have to say. One of them, like Sam, I only had for a year and it was a disaster. Same thing happened. The second, I think if she'd not been my first dog, I would have coped. But I don't think it wasn't all me because they gave her to someone else and he only had her 3 months and she was withdrawn. The other one, I had terrible spending issues with him. He was the one I had when Ronan was a year old and I had him for 2 years and I couldn't sort it out. That's a long story, which I'm not going to tell here. But I'm on dog number 6 now. And if they cost £50,000 from start to finish, basically, then it doesn't take much working out that, you know, we're in the £300,000 mark. And, you know, if I'd have had to pay £50,000 or anything like that, I would never have had a dog, so I have to be thankful to people. But having said that, it does not give them the right. They haven't got a God-given right for my dog to be a source for their entertainment. And I do take issue with people trying to distract my dog. Like, for instance, if I'm waiting at a Pelican Crossing, they'll say, "Oh, hello." And, you know, I will give them a bit of short shrift. I won't be rude, but some people take it the wrong way. And another thing I do take issue with, and this happens to me very often, it's not just me, but all guide dog owners, is people trying to stroke the dog without having the decency to speak to you first. Not even to ask if it's okay, but to acknowledge you. And I find it extremely offensive, I must admit I do. I know they don't mean it in that way, well, some of them probably do, but I had an incident recently at the hospital. I had had a very stressful day. A lot of things had gone wrong. I'd got up there. I waited ages for the woman that I was meant to see and she didn't come out and there was a big mix-up and so I got fed up with waiting. So I made my way to the departure area to wait for transport to come home, which is always stressful for me because they always mess me around because of the dog. And I was actually talking to Obi. Obi had rung me and I was actually talking to him on the phone and someone came up and said, "Excuse me, can I say hello to your dog?" when I'm in the middle of a phone call. And I thought that was the absolute height of rudeness to me. Was no way, unless it was an emergency, would I go interrupt someone on a call, unless because I can't see, I didn't realise they were on a call. There's no way that I would actually interrupt somebody to ask them that. It's so rude. And I said, excuse me, I said to Obi, "Hold on a minute." I said, "Excuse me, I'm in the middle of a phone call at the moment, so I'd rather you left the dog alone, please," or something like that. "Oh, okay." And he was actually okay about it. Some people aren't. I find women get very stroppy more than men, and that are the worst offenders. I had an incident, which again I talked about on here, back in November. I went for an appointment at the hospital on a Saturday for a heart scan as part of my workup for my kidney transplant. And the driver, because it was a Saturday, the driver actually came up. It wasn't my normal place, so I didn't know where to go. So he took me up to the Golden Jubilee wing where they do all the cardio stuff. And we reported, my appointment was 1 o'clock, and we got there a minute to one, and we reported to the reception desk, and I was dying to go to the toilet, and I didn't know how long I was going to have to wait, so I said to the lady, I need to go to the toilet. And it was very quiet, they're like on a skeleton staff. I said, is there anybody who can show me to the toilet, please? Because I'd never been there before, I had no idea where it was. And she said, well, I can't really leave the desk. And the driver said, well, I'll take you. So I said, okay, thank you. So I said, we better hurry up, because I was frightened I was going to get called. And then have to either wait ages or them say I'll have to come back another time. So we went down the corridor. It wasn't that far, but it wasn't right close by either. And I was walking along. I wasn't working the dog, but I was, because he was guiding me. But, you know, the dog had his harness on. He was, please do not distract me, I'm working, or whatever it says. I'm a working guide dog, or whatever it says on it. And as we were walking along, and we were walking quite fast because I was in a hurry, and I was actually feeling quite stressed because I was nervous about the test. And this woman said to me, excuse me, can I stroke your dog? And I said, oh, no, I'd rather you didn't. I'm in a bit of a hurry at the moment. And she got really foul. She was so horrible. She stomped off. She was another patient, I think. She stomped off and saying, I'm never giving to guide dogs again because of people like you. And I was really upset. I was nearly in tears. And the driver couldn't believe it. He said, I can't believe that. He was, and in fact, when I came out the toilet, he took me back and I hadn't been called up. It was fine. But when I'd finished and I let them know that I was waiting for a driver to come back, it was the same driver who took me home again. And he still couldn't stop going on about it. He couldn't believe that somebody could be so rude. And I thought, you know, surely I have got the right to refuse someone. I mean, my dog is there for me. It's not there for them. And I was stressed out. I was there for a hospital appointment. I wasn't on a holiday camp visit. Do you know what I mean? If you're going to the hospital, it's not usually anything that great. It might not be anything that bad either. But what I mean is, it's something that you know, you're not there for the fun of it. So the possibility is that you, or the likelihood is, you might be feeling a bit nervous or stressed, which I was. I mean, okay, it turned out fine. But that's not the point. So I was really upset. In fact, it really stressed me out. When at a time when you actually don't need to be stressed out, when they're just going to look at your heart. So anyway, that was that. They are two recent incidents. And so when Obie and I had a day out a couple of weeks ago, and we were out all day. I mean, the kids were here. So I think, yeah, Connor had a day off. Did Connor have a day off that day? I think he did. Yeah, he did. So they were both here. But I didn't take Niall because going out for me is a bit of an ordeal at the moment, as I've said, and I just couldn't face all the public attention. I just couldn't face it. I don't want it. I wish people would leave me alone. I've gone past the stage where it's entertaining to talk to them. I'm not saying I don't ever enjoy it, because sometimes I do. You know, if I'm sitting waiting at the hospital, some people talk to me, you know, it passes the time. And, you know, if I'm feeling a bit anxious, it can make it, you know, go quicker, and I focus on them and not on what I'm there for. But, you know, there are times like when you're walking along, or when you just don't feel like it, or you're on the bus and you want a bit of peace, you really just want to listen to your music. And sometimes I put my earphones in because I think people will leave me alone, but they start talking to you. And, you know, I think when I keep taking my earphones out to answer them, surely that should be a hint. Actually, she's trying to listen to something, but people just don't take it. And that, to me, this whole thing with the public, I may sound miserable, but to me, that's the biggest downside of owning a guide dog. I'm always making sarcastic comments, but people take it seriously. I say, I'm going to ask for a pit bull next time, meaning that people won't bother talking to my dog, that people won't want to come near me then. And they say, oh, no, but this dog's lovely, you don't want one of them. They take it seriously. I mean, because they're so thick, they don't even realise they're a banned breed in the UK. If I had one, I'd be in serious trouble, even as a pet, let alone a guide dog. And then you get the others who say, oh, well, this dog, look, he looks so sad. sad by arse. There's nothing sad about him at all. He's a clown, you know, he's not sad. And the way they look at you with those big brown eyes. Oh, he's so sad. And you almost feel like they feel like poor dog. And once someone said to me, and this, I was reading it, I'd put this in an email to a friend of mine. I've kept a lot of my emails that I send her, and I read them sometimes. I've got them going back to about 2001, and there's gaps in it because I've lost all of 2006 got wiped off somehow. But it's quite interesting to see how many things have changed. You know, my life's completely changed from then. See how the kids have grown up and all the funny incidents, what we had for dinner this day, all those things are in there. And anyway, I was reading recently about, I went in Subway with my mum, and I had the dog with me. I think this was back in 2012. I had the dog with me. I don't think I've ever told this story on Audio Boo before because I'd forgotten about it till I read this recently. I was sitting at the table. My mum went up. She knew what I wanted. So I went and sat down with the dog because it was crowded in there. And, you know, it didn't really serve any useful purpose for me to stand in the queue with him. So I sat down, and this bloke said, "Excuse me." Now, I knew he was talking to me because there was no one behind me. I was on the nearest seat to the door. And so I said, "Yes." And he said, "I've got my little daughter here. She's three or whatever she was. Can she come and say hello to your dog?" And I went, "Yes, that's fine. As long as you don't," because he was laying down. I said, "As long as you don't get him, no one gets him overexcited, because I want him to stay laying down." So he came over and he bent down and started away straight away. And all that crap. You know, Niall reacted. He didn't get up. He lifted his head up, started wagging his tail, but he was okay. And he still stayed laying down. And then he said, "Oh," and he asked me about when dogs retire. Now, I can't remember exactly what he said now, but he said something about when the dogs retire. "Oh, never mind, mate. One day you'll go to a nice home." And I could have spat in his face because he was crouched down. I said, "He's already in a nice home." I thought, what a bloody cheek. "Never mind, mate. One day you'll go to a nice home." That was so insulting. Because people think these poor dogs, they work all their lives. They work 24/7. And people say to me, "Does he get your washing out the machine for you?" I say, "No, he doesn't." I say, "Sometimes he runs off with my bloody shoe." Actually, this one doesn't. He never picks up my shoes. But Nikki used to. She'd run off with one of my shoes. And I used to get furious because I could find one shoe and I knew she'd had it. And I used to say, "You're meant to be a bloody help, not a bloody hindrance." And one day, one of the kids couldn't go to school because she'd put his school shoe out in the garden and it had rained all night. And he had no shoe in the morning. He only had one shoe. It was Ronan, I think. That was another thing I read in my emails. And things like that really make me laugh. If I could, if they were publishable, I'd read some of them out on Audio Boo, but I don't think they really are. So the language is a bit choice at times. And but things like that really make me laugh when I see, you know, when I read them back in, you know, and I look at them in retrospect. But, you know, it's not funny, really. But people say, "Oh, did he get your washing out machine?" I say, "No, that's a dog for the disabled." I said, "When he's at home, he's just a normal pet. He runs around, he plays, he does naughty things sometimes that he shouldn't." Because people have this misconception that they work, you know, like they're chained up all the time and they're dragging with their head down and that's such, you know, having such a life of suffering. And they don't realise that at home, you know, he's a clown. You know, he runs around with his toys all day and he chases his tail and he cuts his bones and you know, he does very little work. I mean, talk about earning, he certainly doesn't earn his keep, but I mean, that's not his fault either. And not that I'm paying for his keep, because I'm not. I mean, I do buy extra food that he has. Of course, I get treats and things, and I buy, he has some tinned food every day, which obviously Guide Dogs doesn't fund, but in with his complete food. But you know, as I say, that's the big downside to me of guide dog ownership, and that's people's perception and actually the interference with your dog. You know, they wish they'd just back off a bit. I mean, I don't mind the odd questions, and the sad thing is, so many people try and stroke the dog without asking you, and it's such an intrusion that in the end, the people that do ask you, you feel that you want to say no, because it's your chance to actually instill a bit of discipline. So that doesn't seem fair, because the ones that ask should be the ones that get to stroke the dog, and the ones that don't shouldn't. And I do tend to say yes. If I'm in a queue or something like that, I don't really want people stroking the dog. But if they've got children, you know, little kids, and they've said, look, we can go over and stroke this doggy. And then I don't want to say no because the kid might have some whopping big tantrum because they don't really understand. Parents shouldn't promise their kids stuff like that. And they certainly, another thing that really annoys me is when they just let a child run up to a dog because it's a guide dog. It's not a very good example to set because not all guide dogs, I mean, 99% of guide dogs are fine, but some, you know, some don't like being over, you know, having children, being a bit overbearing with them. And not only that, but a lot of pet dogs certainly don't. And it's wrong to encourage a child to think that they can approach any dog without asking first. And I do not agree with that at all. And that happens quite frequently. I do tend to, if people have got learning difficulties, I do tend to make exceptions with them as well. Not if I'm walking or if I'm waiting to cross a road or something where we could potentially be in danger. But if I'm in a shop queue or in the bank or whatever, and I can hear that someone's with a carer or a, you know, a parent and they've got learning difficulties, whether it's a child or an adult, and they want to stroke the dog, I tend to say yes, because I'm not really as hard as nails. And also in the hospital, sometimes I'll walk past people and I've known people, you know, an old person in a wheelchair or someone that's quite disabled, stretch their hands out to stroke the dog and I hear them laughing because it's made them happy. And there's no way I could ever get stroppy, or even if I was walking along working the dog, there's no way I could ever get stroppy with somebody like that because I just can't, you know. If it brightened up their day, then that makes me happy. But, you know, the general run-of-the-mill public, I do have an issue, big issue with it. You know, I really do. And that's the real downside. And that's why, if I don't always take him out with me when I go out with Obi, that's why. Because I can't deal with it sometimes. I just don't feel like it. Being out is enough for me to cope with, just coping with being out, going on buses, dealing with people. Not dealing with people, but the volume of people, if there's lots of people around. So actually having to deal with a lot of questions can make me feel quite anxious. And I don't really want to, and the worst of all, that's not the worst of it, the worst of all is if I have to say no to somebody and then they get nasty, like that woman in the hospital. Because that really was very unpleasant. And then I've had times when I've been out with my mum and we'll say go in the Marks and Spencer's cafe and we'll be sitting there and you'll get people just on the next table and all they do is stare at us the whole time, you know. And I just find that so rude. I mean, why? What's so fascinating in this day and age about someone with a guide dog? And, you know, sometimes they... And one day they came out and asked me if they could stroke the dog. It was two women. I don't know whether they were a mother and daughter or what. They were like middle-aged and elderly. And I said I'd rather they didn't because the dog was laying down and I was trying to eat my meal. I mean, that's what I find it very intrusive. If members of the public or staff, like waitresses or whatever, waiters, come up and start making a fuss of the dog, because I just, when I'm out for a meal, or even if it's a snack, my lunch or whatever, I mean, I could be in a very deep, serious conversation with someone and then just have all this interference. And when I'm out with like that somewhere, I want to forget the dog's there. You know, that's the time for him to rest, to lay down, to be seen and not heard and all that stuff. But one day, these mother and daughter or whatever they were, they asked if they could stroke the dog, and I said I'd rather they didn't because, you know, I went and explained all that, and they did it anyway. You know, when they walked off, my mum said, well, they stroked him anyway. And that is just so blatantly disrespectful, that I do have an issue with all this kind of stuff. So in that way, the cane is a godsend. I do admit that. But having said that, I think weighing everything up, my guide dog is still my preferred method of mobility. And I have had a time when he was first diagnosed with epilepsy back in 2012 where they put him on medication and I couldn't work him for a month or take him out anywhere because they didn't know how it was going to affect him and whether he'd still make judgments properly and whether he was safe. And I did have to go out with my cane and... you know, there was no getting away from it. I had to do it, so I did. And that was fine, but I was relieved when they came and gave him the all clear and we went out for a walk. He hadn't been out for a month and he was just like it had been a day, just a day. You know, he worked fine, he didn't do anything wrong. And they said he's fine. But they did say to me, if ever you don't feel safe with him because of his fits or anything, then just let us know. But he's, touchwood, never had a fit since he's been on medication, and never had, he's always been in the house when he had them. He never had one outside the house. I did used to worry a little bit that, because he used to wake from sleep and have them. They said that's how it always would be. Most dogs, they wake from sleep and have a seizure. But I would worry, like, say I was on a train or a bus and he woke up and had one. I mean, can you imagine what everyone would do? Then it would be terrible. What would I do? So I did start to take, carry a cane in my bag. I don't do that now because I'm pretty confident that, you know, that this is not going to happen. Anyway, I think I've talked long enough. It is
24 minutes and 25 seconds.
I've talked way too long. I'm sorry, everyone. So I'm going to finish this for now and I'll speak to you all soon. Thanks for listening if you did.
24 minutes and pause recording.